This week, I'm going to pop some tags. Only got $20 in my pocket. Welcome to the Midwest Peace Process.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen.
I have the pleasure to present to you now. Ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen.
I have the pleasure to present to you
the Midwest Peace Process.
The world is very different now.
The Midwest Peace
To remind
Process.
America of the fierce urgency of now. 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 Now.
Welcome to episode 57. Today is March 8th, 2013. I'm Jeremy.
And he's Rob.
Welcome to another installment of Discussing Under the Influence. So some people may find it odd that we talk about politics in a bar and invite the people here around us to join in on those conversations. So I wanted to say something about the significance of that. So the United States Marine Corps is understandably proud to claim Tun Tavern in Philadelphia as its birthplace in 1775. It's hard to overstate the importance of pubs and taverns in the formation of this country. A pub, or a public house, as it was known then, was a place to meet with friends, to conduct business, and on occasion, to plot against one's government. One cannot predict where the lighthearted discussions we have here might lead, as I suspect our forefathers' meticulous plans for revolution began with the most casual remarks over pints at the corner pub. That is not to say that we should guard our words, lest we ignite insurrection. Quite the contrary. A nation has never suffered injury from allowing unfettered debate, and where better to foster such discourse than in a social setting among the common man? So take heart that we are engaged in noble pursuits. Solving problems over beer is an age-old tradition in this country and certainly nothing to be ashamed of. So drink up, and on with the show.
Woo-hoo! Cheers.
The insurrection begins.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm not plotting against anything, and there's nothing noble about any of my pursuits.
Yeah, so how do we know if we're doing a noble pursuit or just drinking beer?
Yeah, sometimes it's hard to tell. So, we've had quite a bit happen since the last time we met. Got a lot of links this time in the reading room. We'll probably have to cover a few of those later on. But first I wanted to talk about a topic we kind of got started on here before we started recording. Rob, you want to talk about your the story that got you fired up?
Got fired up this week. Fired up. So in a recent discussion, we were talking about why there was a suicide spike.
Who were you discussing this with?
With my mother. So you Freudians get excited.
He's reading him a bedtime story.
And what do we call this?
We call this the Midwest conflict process that
That's
happens
right.
when me and my mom start talking about politics. Hi, Mom, if you're listening. So we were talking about the recent conflicts in Afghanistan and Iraq and the coinciding suicide spike after those conflicts. Statistically versus other conflicts like Korea, Vietnam, World War II. So we have some problem. Why are these soldiers coming back and shooting themselves? What is going on with these conflicts and why do we have a problem? And my loving mother mentioned that her general feeling was that these kids haven't had enough hardship in their lives when they go into the military and they face some hardships in war and they can't deal with it. And so because they haven't hardship like that when they get out they don't know what to do with themselves and they kill themselves. I then thought, oh my god, that's a pretty offensive thing to say about your war heroes coming back and people who are so disturbed to shoot themselves that somehow they were just that they had their lives too good. So a few weeks later I get an article printed out from NBC which pretty much backs this up. there was a former Navy commander, F-18 Hornet pilot, and some guy that was some member of the VA that who the thoughts that were quoted in the article, which we'll put in the reading room with fancy short links.
Fancy.
is that one reason that the article gave was that back in World War II, the soldiers all had to live in barracks together, and there was more commonality between the fighting troops, but now it's much more isolated. The F-18 pilot said, well, in World War II, those kids grew up in the Depression, and they faced more hardship before conflict. So what I did on the internet, which is what everybody does on the internet, is they quickly scour the internet for something to tell them that they were right in the first place.
Right.
So I started looking in the comments, and this is what I started thinking is how about we talk about the 10-year conflict? This conflict is the longest war we've ever been in, right?
Right.
It's been going on for 10 years, and the conflict is not one where you're told to go shoot and kill that enemy. It's a conflict where you're meant to train people who may turn their guns on you, if you're talking about the green on blue crime, right?
Is what it's
the term. Or you're riding around in Afghanistan protecting the Iraqi people, who sometimes those same Iraqi people are parking car bombs next to the road. So now you're driving along your road in Iowa, and you see a white pickup truck on the side of the road, and the first thing you think, is that an IED or is that not?
Right.
To me, it's a much more mentally taxing kind of conflict.
Similar to Vietnam in some way.
Right. Yeah. And as I read in the comments, the thing about the Vietnam War, where, yeah, you had draft and you had a various amount of people and quality of people that had to get drafted into that war, but they had a 1-year tour. Most of those guys were in there for 1 year. And they tried to get through their year and get home. A lot of death, a lot of awful stuff. These guys have been on multiple year and a half deployments. They're on their fourth year and a half deployment, haven't been home in maybe 13 months out of 6 years or whatever the time frame is. Why aren't those things getting talked about? And I guess to claim that it was oh, the kids are too entitled now and that's why they're having a hard time seems really offensive. But so what do? I was like, let's get some reality. So I posted this article to some of my veteran friends, and they were sympathetic to the article, shocking me. It turns out that in general they agree with my statement that you can't say that the kids are just weak and that's why they're killing themselves. But they did mention that as in any generation of enlisted guys come in, everything's different.
The
communication between the people back home, you're not sitting in a foxhole waiting for mail to come in every 6 months. But maybe that makes it worse, you know? Maybe you have trouble. Maybe before you were at war or you were at home. Maybe it's now too commingled now, where you never know if you're at war or you're not. I don't know, what do you guys think? There, rant over.
Speaking of at war or not, maybe another aspect is that at home, we don't act like we're at war.
Right.
It doesn't affect daily life most of the population. It's an afterthought.
Right, and to bring in my liberal sense and my George W. Bush complaints, I was offended kind of to my core when the idea, like after 9/11, when our president directed us to go shopping to spur the economy, almost like just act like nothing's happening. And because if you go buy stuff at the mall, our country will be stronger and our troops will be able to do their job.
Right. It wasn't buy war bonds or plan a victory garden.
Right.
It was go shopping,
right.
Buy stuff.
Go buy a shirt at Abercrombie & Fitch because that's our consumer economy. And what does that do to the troops? I don't know.
I agree with what Jeremy said. I mean, it has not felt like, you know, maybe for the first few months, you know, when there was just saturation coverage on the news and that's what everybody was talking about, you know, you kind of got a feel that might have been the way, you know, World War One or World War Two felt here at the beginning. But, yeah, I mean, we've obviously grown fatigued of those stories. They're not the lead anymore in the news and haven't been for years now.
Right.
So, yeah, what does that do to the morale of the guys who are serving over there? They know we're not even thinking about them. They're not the lead story on the news anymore. It's not a big issue anymore.
Right, and when I get real depressed, even more than now, is I think that's, like, I think a right-wing approach to that complaint is that we've just gone soft, or we don't appreciate hard work anymore, or we just don't know, you know, we don't know what it's like to sacrifice, something like that. In my lefty wing thought is like, is the structure that's in place to get us to consume and to buy and advertise. Like now we're able to basically sell war like we sell McDonald's or anything else.
Sure.
It's a consumer product. So the point of the war is to make it as easily palatable as possible. Like a sweet little pill. Oh, here's your nice little war. You get this too. Like it's not like our human instincts have grown weaker to suffering. It's that we're marketed to every day in a way that makes us not suffer. We need to make things easy.
Well, and so, you know, take that to the next logical step. We're marketing the war using drones now, right? So now it's war 2.0, now with fewer casualties. So yeah, I mean, it's the same kind of mentality. It's made it a lot less personal. You know, it was already very impersonal, but it's abstracted it even more.
Right, except if you're that guy who's been there and saw your buddy die when the Humvee got blown up. Well, boy, it's real personal to you, but to everybody else, it's just, you know, it's just another consumer product.
Right. Wow. Thanks, Obama.
Yeah. Now I feel worse than when I started. Usually when I get this out, it's cathartic. I feel better.
Sorry, man.
But yeah, that's what I feel. I feel like, and the way.
Well, I will say that, you know, when I read the article, there were some parts of it that I could agree with. I mean, when it said that, you know, these kids today, you know, this is like the self-esteem generation. That's
right.
What they call them in there. And that's true to a large degree. I mean, certainly more so than in the past. I think, and I'm going to rant now about the public schools, but I'd say that's, you know, that's one of the things that you can blame on the public schools is, you know, it's no longer as much about preparing kids for the real world and teaching them that, hey, you're going to have to compete to succeed. It's, hey, everybody deserves to succeed. Everybody deserves the same outcome, you know. And when you're raised with that mentality, then, I mean, obviously we've got an all-volunteer force now. But the people that go into it, and I think I mentioned this to you, it's kind of the Private Benjamin syndrome, right? I mean, they go in, they think they're special, and, you know, that everybody else should have to conform to them. You know, I knew people like that when I was in. So, I mean, I'm sure it's only worse now, 25 years later.
I could see those complaints. I just can't make the leap to saying that that's why there's more suicides.
Well, no, I probably can't make that leap either. I think there are other factors involved. But, you know, if there was some small uptick in the suicide rate, I could probably see my way clear to say, well, that's the reason.
We've talked about suicide before with the Foxconn. China.
Right.
And it turns out that percentage is not that different from the general population. How different is the rate of military suicide compared?
Well, this story said it was twice the baseline rate of the population. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know where those statistics came from. I don't know if it's cited or referenced, but.
And go on my second rant of the night.
Go for it, man.
Keep it going. I read this article, or maybe it was just something I dreamed up. I don't know where my thoughts come from. I get bombarded with things when I don't wear my tinfoil hat. But the concept was the gradual eroding of respect for public employees. If you think back in the day, or at least in our nostalgic Norman Rockwell sense, we had a respect for policemen, firemen, teachers, soldiers, you know, your mailman. Let's go with those five. I'm counting them out with my hand over here. So those were public employees that you had some respect for.
Right.
But now we're getting a little sick of paying for public employees. Maybe it's for pensions, maybe it's for taxes. Why are my taxes so high? So I think we're starting to find, what I hear in the media is already we have an attack on teachers. Why do they get 3 months off? They're overpaid, whatever it is. You know, or even policemen and firemen. Those firemen don't do anything. We can do this in the private enterprise. And like the sacred cow, I don't want to call them a cow, was the military. You know, you can't really diss the military. Right. And so when I saw this article, I was like,
and let's not forget the post office.
The post office.
Who needs a post office anymore?
Right. And the dissing of the post office is funny when you think you can drop a stamp. How much is a stamp now? I don't mail anything.
46 cents or something?
Okay. So I can go anywhere in the country, pay 46 cents, drop a letter anywhere in the country, and get it mailed anywhere else in the country, right to their house for 46 cents in 2 or 3 days. Oh my God, what a horribly inefficient system.
It is a complete bargain, and that's why.
Right.
They're going bankrupt.
And maybe it's inefficient. Yes. Right. 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 So, and then the like out of the five, it was the military. And I was like, when I read this article, part of me thought, like, is this the next step in this degrading and disrespecting of public employees? Like, why do we respect these soldiers? They're taking our money. They're doing a job. They're obviously not doing it very well. Maybe we should just, maybe we should pay them less. Why do they get VA benefits? I don't get VA benefits.
Right.
You know, it gave me a glimpse of a possible slippery slope about the continual degradation of the idea of a public employee of any kind.
I think it'd be a long way before the military started getting the same critical eye that post office, police officers, they get. I think we've seen it go the other way since the first Gulf War to the current Afghanistan and Iraq conflict, whatever you want to call it.
Operation Infinite Justice.
Yeah. Well, they had to change the name of that because
it was offensive.
Yeah. Who is it? Buddha is the only one capable of infinite justice? Was it Buddha or Muhammad?
Muhammad. Yeah.
Buddha, that wrong country.
I was wondering why he showed up, but he's everywhere, right?
This guy with a belly, whatever. None of them did any crunches. But it was, let's not do what we did during Vietnam. Let's show respect to our military.
Right.
So you still get a lot of that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think we've done a good job of reversing that.
Yeah. Almost to the point where, I actually had Marine Corps reservist tell me once. I did some volunteer work with Toys for Tots, and they have, obviously, Marine Corps there. And I asked them, how is it being a reservist, you serve? He said, well, really, it's kind of tiring, people always thanking me for my service. So it's like we've gone, typical American way, we've gone complete opposite direction,
right.
Overboard the other way.
Yeah, I had a buddy who played in the Air Force band. Good for him, as music students, a common path in the music world is you go to school, you go to grad school, you make your best shot, you just work as hard as you possibly can to get the big job. And when you can't get the big job, the next big job is military bands, which are, so that's why they're so darn good, is because they got really good players. He's there getting his coffee, and the guy behind him is like buying his coffee for being in the service. He's like, dude, I'm playing oboe here,
So did he have to go to the Armed Forces School of Music?
No, he was already trained up and passed the audition. I also read an article about, like, one guy was like, stop thanking me for my service, because you're paying me. My job is to kill people that you don't want to kill yourself.
Right.
Yeah. So don't think, I'm doing a grisly act that you're claiming needs to get done, and I'm doing it for you, and you're paying me money to do this thing you don't want done. So, don't thank me for that.
Right.
But back to your original point about we don't respect police officers and firemen and the post office the way we used to. Look at the scandals in the news. I think that's part of it. We don't have the trust that we used to. You go to the post office, what do you get? You know, sauntering around and, number 5, and you're number 27. And,
There's one guy working the counter, and they've got, you know, 4 stations.
But you don't want to hire another guy.
Hey, no, trust me. I mean, to go back to your earlier point, I got no problem deriding any public employee, okay?
It's what I do.
That's right. That is what I do. Especially cops. I mean, we talked about this before on the show. I don't have a whole lot of respect for police. Firemen, I'll cut them some slack, but
they have a pretty sweet deal.
At the same time, I mean, I know some firemen, and I know that, I mean, honestly, 1 out of every 10 calls where they suit up and run out of the fire station is an actual fire. You know, the rest of it is they're getting a cat out of a tree. Or they're...
Does that really happen?
Or it's, you know, a domestic violence case where, you know, somebody got hit over the head and so they, you know, they call an ambulance and the ambulance automatically necessitates the fire department get dispatched at the same time.
Yeah, to hose the blood off the sidewalk.
Right.
It's totally humane.
So, I mean, I'm not saying that they deserve any disrespect. I'm just saying that, you know, you talk to the firemen, they're not terribly happy with their jobs the way they are. You know, they join up to help people, to save people in burning buildings, and they don't get to do that very often. Add to the fact that, you know, they're eligible for nationwide, probably talking billions of dollars in pensions, as are all public employees, it seems.
Isn't it the pensions? What if we just got, what if there were no pensions?
Well, I'm okay with that. I mean, I think everybody should be responsible for saving their own, you know, for their own retirement. I mean, we talked about that before, too. Get rid of Social Security. Get rid of pensions. Let everybody,
It seems like the pension thing. The reason why people are mad at cops is because of pensions. I just want to say that because it's so outrageous. There's a lot of reasons people are mad at the cops. But when you're talking about the bane of a public employee, it's really the pension. We're not really worried about their... $50,000 they're making on whatever the average is. You know, it's not really that. It's the billions and billions of dollars of pensions that are unfunded, right? That's the thing that kills you.
Well, yeah. I mean, the post office, $7 billion in debt, $4 billion of that is pension.
Right.
So, yeah.
So it's not really about the 49-cent stamp. It's the fact that you've got to pay everybody's health care.
I think I would be willing to pay $1 to get a letter from here to anywhere I want.
Like a bag of pretzels.
Yeah,
like,
but I'd pay that dollar to UPS or FedEx.
Well,
you know? It doesn't have to be...
True, but I was going to mail a DVD to a relative, and they live out in the country in Kentucky.
It's going to be 2 stamps, right?
Essentially, it was a little... I think I paid for... I think I ended up paying like $2.50. But I was going to send it UPS. It was $17.
Yeah, well,
cost more than DVD.
Okay, so you know why?
Because it's a moneymaker.
No.
Because
right now it's because the law doesn't allow FedEx and UPS to compete with the post office on first class mail.
I didn't know that.
So they have to call it something else in order to deliver your letter. And by calling it something else, they can charge you more for it. But the law does not allow them.
They wouldn't have to charge you more. They could charge you $2.49.
They could.
Who cares what they call it?
They are not allowed to deliver letters.
This was not a letter.
I know.
Okay, so how?
But it had to go in some big envelope, right? I mean, they couldn't like put it in a little mailer and send it.
It was a DVD. It was a DVD.
Okay, well. I'm just telling you that the law forbids them from competing with first class mail.
But how does it say you have to charge at least this much?
No, I mean,
okay, well then that's where I would say UPS lost out on a customer because if it had been $5, I probably would have done it because I wouldn't have known the post office was a little bit cheaper, but
$17.
Okay,
so All you FedEx and UPS executives that are listening to the podcast.
You missed out on my $17.
That's right.
Take that.
Get your crap together.
But it is a difference. Like, I don't know. Yeah, I think we used to have kind of a default respect for those sorts of positions, and that's changing now. But maybe...
Well, and I think the other problem is, you know, like, I would have to dig up a graph somewhere showing, like, the number of public employees over time. But you want to talk about a hockey stick graph, that's one right there.
How does it map to the global warming?
Yeah, well...
Well, this one's actually happening.
Yes. Well, we're going to get email about that one.
That's a good one.
All right.
I guess we're taking a break.
Yeah, we're going to take a little break.
Rob felt the heat of global warming and bailed.
We'll be right back. We are back, and I wanted to dig into a little listener feedback here. I posted a story on Facebook about the TSA and how they had subjected a 3-year-old toddler who was wheelchair bound to a search, and this happened actually here at St. Louis Lambert Field. So this made national news, and one of our listeners, her name's Megan, she posted this on Facebook. She said, congrats to this mom for advocating on behalf of her kiddo. She did a fantastic job keeping it together. What happened to common sense and compassion for our kids? Well, I would totally agree with that.
I agree, and going back to the respect thing that Rob was talking about, I think we have ratcheted that down in general. There is a general lack of respect. There is a general lack of compassion for certain types. It's, well, this is my job, and I'm going to be the automaton and do my job.
Right.
There's not critical thinking. There's not...
So,
what's the spirit of what I'm supposed to be doing?
Yeah, so the thought that occurs to me is, what has the TSA done to you know, cause this decline in respect for public employees?
I think they've done a great job.
Oh, please.
Well, and let's...
Well, the employees themselves, it's really... And yeah, you're right. I mean, you're right. What, like, where's the common sense? But if you're a TSA employee, I think you're probably drilled in all your training. You're not paid to think. You're not paid to make judgment calls.
Well,
right?
That's probably true.
Right. You have to go do this thing. So it's not really that. It's more the organization. It's more the...
But my point is, I don't think the TSA is high on the list of most respected public employees, right? I mean, and they're one that a lot of people come in contact with on a daily basis. So, you know, their reputation is not stellar. Does that reflect then on all public employees? Have they done a disservice to the rest of them?
It could be.
I don't know.
I mean, what
I'm
used
speculating
to,
here.
Let's go over in the Wayback Machine and try to remember what used to happen. Like, I remember as a kid going on there, and there was just some private company, which I say with disdain. Could you hear the disdain?
What private company? They were airline employees, generally.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, the airlines were responsible for their own security.
I remember it being just sort of outsourced. They may have been paid by the airline, but it was some company,
well,
it was some subcontractor.
I mean, perhaps.
You know, Winko Security that would get a contracting job with Delta, because Delta didn't know about security. That wasn't their expertise. But Winko...
Okay, but Winko, if they had so many complaints, then the airline would fire them and bring in a new subcontractor, wouldn't they?
Would they?
I would think they would.
You're seeming to make a case that the free market works.
Well, okay, so here's my beef
the
with
point is, yeah.
My beef with the TSA and the whole, you know, airport security in general is it doesn't actually make us safer. It just makes people feel safer.
Right.
And you know, if you want to talk about the way it was, I was 5 years old the first time I flew on a plane, okay? I flew from St. Louis to Kansas City. And I remember somebody had a hunting rifle in the little closet where you could, like, hang your clothes, you know, up front. And, in the 60s and 70s, that was not uncommon for people to carry weapons on board planes. It was fine. There were no rules against it, and people did it. And so, I mean, we've gone from that to, you know, what we have now, and, you know, I don't want to segue too quickly into this other story about, you know, the TSA's announcement this week about allowing small knives on board aircraft again. We'll get there. But I'm just saying, you know, it's all very schizophrenic to me.
No offense to our schizophrenic listeners.
Yes.
All five of, well, one of you, but...
That's right.
Pretty good.
Our one schizophrenic listener who emails us under five different addresses.
Well, yeah, like a lot of security measures, I'll bring up the office building where I happen to be. After September 11th, they moved in the concrete barricades you see dividing highways and that kind of. Right. They moved those in to block off certain entrances to the parking lot.
Right.
They serve no real purpose except for making daily life harder for the employees.
Yeah. Because you can no longer enter and exit through the way you used to.
Right.
Yeah.
But if somebody were going to drive a truck full of fertilizer and whatever else up to the building,
they can still do that.
They can still do it.
Right.
It makes no difference.
You just have to drive a little bit farther.
Yes, it is. It is completely cosmetic.
Right. Yeah, because there is no. I mean, it'd be one thing if there were an armed guard.
There is not at
the one entrance that's now available, but there isn't. Right.
Yeah, a little shack.
I'm with you. Yeah. If you. You know, if you consult with any of the security experts, they will tell you that what we have in airports right now is all theater. It does not actually increase security at all.
So how would a private enterprise do it any better?
Probably the way El Al does it.
Tell us.
They profile.
Yeah.
They do.
Well,
can you bring a hunting rifle on board?
I don't know. I don't know what all their rules are. I don't know what all their tactics are. But
you got a pretty good record.
Well, here's what I would like to see. I would like to see it left up to the airlines, and you know, they can decide then if, you know, they could market themselves to the passenger who's worried about security. You know, you would have secure airlines that you could fly, and you know, they like. Do a full body cavity search on you before you get on the airplane. Or you could fly Ganja Airlines that allows you to take, you know, any weapons on board that you want, and they actually give you, you know, frangible rounds for your weapon as you step on board. You know what I'm saying? And they let you smoke anything you want to smoke while you're on the plane, and...
I'm not going to fly that airline just for the smoke.
Well, you don't have to.
Exactly.
That's the point. That's the free market at work. But what we have now is one size fits all.
This is a great example, and it comes back to the Midwest peace process at its core. It's like, I just don't think this is something that the free market can solve. You know, I don't think that, like, when... It always amuses me about the airline industry anyway, when people are like, oh, well, let's have American Airlines, we'll fuse with the United or whatever they fuse with. I don't even know.
US Airways.
And we'll keep this logo, and we'll get this new livery, and we'll do this special stuff like
livery.
Does,
It's livery.
It is. I'm saying it right now.
I think he's right.
Yeah. Two against three. But when you buy an airfare, do you even think of the service? Do you think of the colors of the plane? Do you even think of the style of the plane? When I buy an airfare, I just pick the cheapest airfare I got.
Right, that's going to get me from A to B.
Right, right. I don't think about security. I don't think about service. I don't think about maintenance. I don't think about how good the Sky Mall is, because I love the Sky Mall. I'm a big fan.
That's the same for all airlines.
See? Monopoly. But you don't think about those things. So you can't make a direct correlation between, I'm getting into trouble here, between the level of security for that private enterprise for the accidents that they're going to have. You know, all you need is the one outlier, and you'd be like, oh, we can't fly them. You know, doesn't work like that.
An airline that is willing to cut corners on security is eventually going to pay the price, and they're probably going to go out of business as a result.
But isn't it quite possible that the airline that isn't cutting corners could also pay the price? And then now what? What did they
but
not
if I'm a terrorist, I'm not going to go after the hard target. I'm going to go after the easy target. So then all the airlines are competing so that they're not the slowest buffalo in the herd, right? Because they don't want to get taken out by the pack of wolves.
So what happened before 9/11? When Muhammad Atta showed up with a knife, like presumably security should have stopped those guys.
Well, what happened was you had a culture that was based on all the hijackings and all the other events that had occurred back in the 70s, right? That necessitated the change in policies. Because, like I said, you used to be able to carry guns on a plane,
right?
And at that, but you know, from that point all the way up to 2001, the standard policy was: you hijack a plane, fine, we'll fly you wherever you want to go.
You'll land in the
Bahamas. You land, and everybody gets off the plane. Nobody gets hurt. Everything's fine.
Right.
Well, the rules have changed now. That can't happen anymore. So the response needs to be different now too.
How do you expect the free market to be that response? I completely agree. The government sucks at all sorts of things.
Okay, so...
And it sucks. The TSA sucks. But I just... I don't agree that the that somehow the free market can solve this problem. I think it can solve problems. I think they're doing their crappy best at it. I think the free market is really good at selling TVs and hamburgers. I don't think it's really good at airline security. Or police. Or whatever it is.
How else would you drive innovation in those markets?
It doesn't... Yeah, I mean, I see what you're saying. I mean,
there is no innovation right now.
Right, there's no incentive for any innovation, right?
No.
TSA is getting rid of the body scanners. They're allowing knives on the airplane. So what are their ideas, right?
For what?
For making it better for this.
They're letting knives on.
The big things that they push... This is it. You have to get this scan. You have to do this.
Well, you have an evolving threat. They're flexible, baby.
Well, okay, so since you brought the story up.
Oh.
And I'll put a link in the show notes to this one, but a former head of Homeland Security, I guess he was the head of the TSA, not Homeland Security. But anyway, the head of the TSA went on record as saying, why stop at knives? Let people carry machetes and, you know, any kind of pointy object they want to carry on a plane now.
Even Rob's head.
And and his point was, you can't take over an airplane now with that stuff. Because, you know, airplanes have fundamentally changed. The door into the cabin has been fortified. There is no chance of somebody with a box cutter taking over a plane or any other sharp instrument. So why not allow all those things on the planes? Now, this is a former head of the TSA saying this. And I'm saying, take that argument a little further. You know, you want to fortify that wall. Fortify it so that, you know, guns won't even shoot through it.
Well, you can shoot a gun through the window. We see Twilight Zone, the movie, and the gnome is out there. You can't box cutter out the...
Mythbusters did that already.
And you all get sucked out?
No.
That's how I understand it, and I'm sticking with it.
But you're right about the pointing objects.
But then you have...
But maybe we shouldn't have fortified the doors. Maybe we could have the airline without the fortified doors. And you could bring the kid up into the cockpit and they could look at the thing, you know? Look at the, oh, look fortified at the displays, the Jimmy, like airplane.
So you let the crazy guy on with the machete.
Have you ever been to a Turkish prison?
And you have two guys land a plane full of body parts in the back.
Right, right. Well, he said that. He said it doesn't mean that there won't still be acts of violence on the plane, but they're not going to take over the plane.
Right.
Which apparently is the goal, right? To prevent
right.
that.
Right, right, right. I've always had this thought that...
You can't prevent all acts of violence.
This thought, like, appeared to me recently. I was at some point in Boston, I got on the subway, and there was a guy with a baseball bat. I found this
probably Wade Boggs.
right. He's going to work. But I was like, baseball bat, you know, like baseball bat, like at the park, like, yeah, let's hit it around, you know, baseball bat in the subway, kind of scary, you know, why is that guy got a baseball bat? It's just a guy, nothing else, baseball bat. Yeah, I mean, there's no security against having a baseball bat and just walloping people, like, right. like, you know. Going Mark McGuire on a bunch of people.
And the TSA is going to let wiffle ball bats go now.
Right, those hurt.
You can carry a wiffle ball bat.
I've gotten pegged with one.
Did it like this? Did it like that? Did it with a wiffle ball bat.
So,
to the Beastie Boys.
Yes.
R.I.P. Adam Young.
Okay, so more listener feedback. This is from our listener, Eric. He is responding now to a previous discussion we had about drones, and specifically personal drones. And he shared a link to a video. He said, and I'll put this in the show notes. He says, you really need to watch the video. Some of it is a little overly dramatic, but the footage of the remote-controlled vehicle firing the paintball gun is pretty cool. I'm not sure they're right about how illegal it all is, though. I know I sent you an article a while back about how legal it is to use a remotely piloted vehicle for spying, and adding a gun doesn't seem to change the legality all that much. So, I don't know. I think this is one of those areas that, you know, the technology has advanced so quickly... But Congress hasn't kept up with it yet.
And
it's going to happen. It just hasn't happened yet. I think the government is going to step in and start regulating the use of personal, remotely piloted vehicles.
Should they?
Well, that's an excellent question.
Maybe we should ask some people
on the street.
They regulate the use of piloted vehicles. Personal vehicles. So remotely.
Should they not? That's a good question to go off the rails here. So as a pilot yourself, little known fact to the MPP listeners, hey, you gotta go through a lot of government loopholes. You gotta file a flight plan, you have to keep maintenance records on whatever the plane is.
You don't have to file a flight plan.
Actually, that's true. That's true.
That is true.
And I also know that the civilian pilot community has a severe libertarian streak in it too, right? That your ability to take off from airfields and not tell anybody where you're going is a kind of an important thing in the civilian pilot community, right?
It was never a big thing for me. I wasn't like, oh, I'm going to... fly nap of the earth to skirt the radar.
So how do you feel as a civilian pilot and your freedom to move about the country and your requirements to conform to government regulations? Is it over-intrusive? Do you think it's about right? Or do you think it's...
I have not experienced any overly intrusive issues with that. But... I know.
So the government's working.
No,
let it be known.
I would not say that either, because I'm not sure I have enough experience with it to say. I went through the loopholes, or the loopholes, the hoops, did not find any loopholes. You know, with getting all the hitting all the requirements to get my licenses. And I,
do you think a free market system would have done a better job in controlling your preparation for being able to fly around?
I'm not sure. I haven't really thought about it at this level. It was just stuff I had to do. Like, I had to get this many hours.
Right.
I had to do these maneuvers, and I had to have this guy sign off my logbook.
But it was the government. It was the government that was granting you the license to be able to fly around.
Government that's granting the license, but it was all these private companies doing the training.
Right.
It was agents, private citizens who had gone through their own hoops to get the authorization or to get the ability to sign me off.
Right.
And say, yeah, this guy is good enough to do this.
And they have incentive for their own personal name, right?
Right, right.
Because they don't want to sign you off if you're a joker.
They'll sign you off if you're going to crash or kill somebody, because then they look back at, well, where did this guy get his training? Who did his check ride?
Right.
But now, the other... I do take issue with this, because this year went into effect new regulations on minimum hours for pilots. For specifically, I think it's air transport pilots, which that's the highest license you can get. Minimum time was, you could get a job at an airline with 500 hours.
When you say minimum hours, you mean that's the total number
of hours.
Right.
500 hours, you could get on in a regional, and you know, that's pretty low, but it happens. This year, they enacted new regulations where the minimum time is 1,500 hours. So three times what it was. The reason they started looking at this was because of a few airline accidents with the regionals. There was the Colgan Airlines in Buffalo, New York.
Buffalo.
There was one in Kentucky where they took off from the wrong runway and killed everybody but the co-pilot. A few incidents like that. And they said, we have to do something with the training. And, you know, this is inadequate. These airlines are doing the bare minimum. Well, so what do? They bump up the minimum time. Turns out that minimum time was not a factor, was not determined to be a factor in any of those crashes accidents.
What was? Because I think I watched 2020 2 minutes.
But they all trace back eventually to pilot error. It didn't have anything to do with necessarily the number of hours they had flown.
Right. But I think I watched a silly news documentary on the Buffalo crash for about 12 minutes, but
okay.
That gives me the right to recreate it inaccurately right here. Was that the Buffalo pilots, those pilots were not paid enough to even support themselves on just their pilot career, so they're coffee shop waitresses. I think the co-pilot in that situation had to get a second job just to pay for a rent. That's how poor the pay was.
Right.
The free market is driving. Good way to go. Free market is driving those pilot salaries so low that people are willing to take that risk and say, hey, we'll pay this person $17,000 a year to fly these regional jets. And people can't live on $17,000 a year. And people are, obviously the company, the claim was that the company is willing to take that risk. I'd rather pay $17,000 and take the risk of one of these things going down than pay a living wage for a professional pilot.
Yes, that is very true.
Right.
Chesley Sullenberger, the guy who landed in the Hudson River with the A320, he said that same thing, that salaries keep declining and it is becoming a safety issue.
Right. Right, because the pilots are tired. Yeah, I mean,
pilots are tired.
You have requirements on how many flights they can fly, but there's no requirement that says you can't work a 12-hour shift at Starbucks before you go report at the airfield, right?
But there's nothing that says you have to get 8 hours of sleep. We have to figure out that you were asleep for 8 hours and you are well rested. There's no check for that.
Right.
And that's the same with the air traffic controllers. They have similar rules as far as crew rest, as pilots, I believe. So, how do you...
everything boils down to personal responsibility.
Indeed.
But the point of all that, you would ask me if I think the government is overbearing. Yeah, in this case, they changed the regulation. It was a knee-jerk reaction. Knee-jerk reaction, and didn't solve a problem.
Hi!
How you guys doing?
Hey!
Yes!
Jerry, these are not guys, it's these like, are ladies.
Okay, so that was a kind of an unscheduled break, but we're back.
Rob's taking a selfie over there.
Yeah, Rob's taking a selfie. What are you doing? Playing chess. Rob's already checked out of the discussion. All right, so do we have any stories here in the reading room we want to talk about?
Yes, I have two.
Okay.
First one, this is a kind of a personal axe. Person I don't like. Story with the whole idea of sequestration coming at the time it was approaching.
Right.
Hadn't happened yet, but there was an article. These people are saying, hey, there is no discussion about cutting congressional pay and all
right.
these budget talks. Why not? Nancy Pelosi, in her infinite wisdom, came out saying, congressional pay cut would undermine the dignity of the job. And that, to me, was proverbial fingers on a chalkboard.
Yeah,
and
that is
think,
pretty irritating.
I do not associate dignity with our Congress.
No, those two words don't ever
wanna,
enter into my mind
to talk
at
about
the same time.
Low opinion of public servants, that is the epitome of it for me right there. You have a guy, this was it, Menendez guy is being investigated for all the prostitutes and taking these trips, and it's one scandal after another. I mean, daytime soap operas can't keep up with these folks. And Pelosi, she can't say, hey, yeah, maybe we should look at this and see what we can do under these circumstances to trim our budget. She has to say no. Out of the question, it would undermine the dignity of the job.
Oh, I have so much to say. I didn't think I had anything
to
say.
I'm sure you do have so much to say and how her
no.
pantsuits are worth every penny.
They are.
Quit rubbing your head and just say it.
It's so awful. Okay. So, this is a great thing you bring up. Because it points to so many things. Okay, so you have a Nancy Pelosi who's a House Speaker. She's a House Speaker because she's been in the House forever. Why has she been in the House forever? Is because she's in a completely, totally wacko Democratic district that she can say whatever she wants and she's going to get back in, right?
Let me just interject. Former House Speaker.
That's right. Unfortunately. But if there was a Democratic majority, boy, she'd be in there. And she takes this concept and she completely botches it by saying something about the dignity of the job. Just shut up already. I'm completely with you. Come on.
Whoa.
But
back up the tape.
But look, what really matters? The whole question is stupid. I've seen this stuff on Facebook and like, oh, how about we cut congressional pay? Boy, they get right to work, whatever. Yeah. You know, come on, that's stupid. The amount of congressional pay a year in the total budget of the United States is so minuscule. It's like a gnat hair on a cat.
True.
But so what
that
the real
mean they shouldn't have to take shouldn't have to shoulder some of the load.
What they should do is just not pay them anything. Come on, all you know how much it costs you to become a senator? You have to be a millionaire to be a senator. It's a requirement right now. If you want to be in the Senate, you better have $1 million or more.
How about one of these, the pictures that I've seen going around on Facebook that say, if you don't pass a budget, you don't get paid.
That's a good idea.
And you want to talk about pensions.
But
you got pensions and their health.
But even if you said you don't get paid, you know how much Nancy Pelosi would feel bad about her missing her whatever $100,000 a year is? Nancy Pelosi, rich. She rich. She's like she's
yeah,
not
rich.
She's
she
not,
is. Her husband is
like,
even more
like,
rich.
Like Chris Rock. She's not rich like Shaquille O'Neal rich. She's rich like the guy who signs Shaquille O'Neal's check rich. You know, so she doesn't really care about that little. That's like,
so that's
like
point.
Play
why
money.
Why give them money at all then?
Exactly.
It should be back like it was when you are a public servant. This
well,
is not
and
a
it's
job,
obviously
right?
So stupid. It's even worse than that because it's obviously so stupid now in the current environment that you have to be rich to even run for Senate. So why are you trying to... So not only is she protecting her piddly salary, which is just play money for her, she's attaching it to the dignity of her job. Come on, Pelosi!
Right. And man. It's and this goes for... this is not...
You guys have been hanging around me too long.
It's just so stupid. But the Congress, as it's set up right now, encourages such stupid things to say. Right?
Second thing.
Okay.
You're pointing at me,
no, I thought you had something else.
No, I was just trying to say this is not a partisan.
Right,
it's not a partisan
right.
comment.
Right.
She just happened to be the one, and I can't stand
but
it.
It's but it's yeah.
All right, what else you got?
My other story here that I really liked. The link. I don't know what the link said, but I titled it "When Democracy Works as It Was Intended." The story about this goes back to gun control. Story about gun shop owners and distributors refusing government contracts based on the idea that they're saying, hey, I'm not gonna, if you are banning these weapons, you're banning citizens from owning these weapons, I'm not gonna sell them to you either, government. And that to me, it's like, yes, that is democracy.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's a lot of them now across the country that have decided that, you know, if the state is at all restrictive on gun rights, then they won't sell any products to, you know, law enforcement from that state or, you know, the government of the state itself. But
why
of course,
are you wrinkling
your... All this is going to do is, you know, like in so many other markets, it'll drive it underground, and you know, the police department will just set up a fake email account, and you know, so they can buy the stuff on the sly. And but you know, I'm in agreement with that. I mean,
Rob is scoffing.
It's a nice idea in principle, but principles are just that. They're just principles. I mean, isn't there going to be?
Wow.
Isn't there going to be, isn't there, if A gun shop holds this principle, isn't the free market drive B gun shop to say, oh yeah, I'll sell it, I'll
it buy it.
Well, maybe, yeah.
But then maybe everybody else, all the citizens will say, hey, that guy is still supporting right. the government, so screw that guy, we're going to buy from this guy.
Right. The market doesn't work like that.
Oh my gosh.
You're right, it doesn't work that bad in some cases because that kind of information doesn't get out.
Right, right, because people are as stupid as the government is.
And,
right.
yeah, so, I mean...
It's a nice idea.
It's the whole made in the USA kind of thing, right? Some people care about it, some people don't. Some people care about it, but they don't know what's made in the USA and what's not.
Right.
And, you know, they're not gonna invest the effort to find out.
Right, right.
They're just going to buy the cheapest thing they see at Walmart
right.
and move on.
Yeah.
Okay, so I got a couple of stories, too, I wanted to point out here. I provided a link to a Planet Money podcast that I thought was interesting about hospital bills. And it kind of digs into, it takes a couple of hospital bills and digs into the details of them, like, you know, why does a Band-Aid cost $7, you know, that kind of thing. So I thought it was interesting. I'd recommend our listeners check that one out. So I'll put that in the missing links. And the other one... Oh, well, this kind of ties into our past episodes about gun control. I found this after our last episode. When we were talking about defensive gun use, you know, the number of instances, like how many times guns are used to prevent crime, and how there are no good statistics on that. So I added this link to the... It's called the Kleck Study, because that's the name of the guy who did this study. Back in 1995, and this study is often cited for the statistic you hear a lot, for 2.5 million defensive gun uses. So this link I've got explains where that number came from and why it's completely bogus. Okay, so I'm throwing that out there, and then in addition to that, one of our listeners provided a link. Actually, our listener Eric provided a link to an article that I think would also along these same lines about why the science behind gun laws is so bad. And I read it. I think it's pretty interesting. So I'll put a link to that in the show notes as well for anybody who wants to check that out. Because it does talk about how basically the state we're at right now is nobody can say pro or con anything about how guns affect crime because we just don't have the data. And what little data we have is terrible. So,
right. Which leads to the cherry picking of facts of whoever right. wants to push whatever opinion. You know.
Right, and everybody takes the same crappy data and they extrapolate it in whatever direction right. they want to go with it. So, okay, that's all I have. You guys got anything else? All right,
Bob's doing the blackjack dealer clap, brushing of the
hands.
And
I'm out.
All right. Well, I want to thank our gracious hosts here at Granite City Food and Brewery, and I also want to thank our listeners. And please send us your comments, your feedback on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter. We're a freaking media empire over here, so, you know, get in touch.
Howard Stern, eat your heart out.
That's right. Get in touch with us and let us know what you think. And we will see you next time.
Good night.
Bye now.